pandemic got us into a reflective space and made us look inward to see what we can do for the world at large. As a self-expression coach, I became a catalyst for women and started Vani, a one-on-one coaching program for women on finding their voice, to speak up, to be visible. As a storyteller, I spotted there were many ordinary people amongst us leading extraordinary lives, making a difference to the world, and they needed to be heard. Thus was born You and I with Rashmi Shetty, where amazing personal journeys with their uniqueness and individuality are showcased. A reaffirmation of the fact, open your eyes wider, the world is far more beautiful when we acknowledge the presence of both you and I. Our guest today is Abhinayam Palli, who, hugely influenced by his musician parents, entered the magical world of music. Having grown up with playing instruments such as the tabla and the piano, right from the tender age of 5, he took a fancy to the guitar around his early teens, exploring it through jazz and blues. Abhay then felt the need to explore it in a rarely visited genre on the guitar, South Indian classical music. Abhay met his guru and mentor, the legendary mandolin maestro Vidwan U. Srinivas, under whose incomparable and invaluable tutelage he cemented his new style of playing and developed it into a polished and fine art form unique to the electric guitar. He is now currently the only Carnatic guitar artist in the world performing and teaching the U. Srinivas Bani of playing on the electric guitar. In 2021, Abhay released his self-titled debut solo Carnatic guitar album, co-produced with internationally acclaimed composer and producer Sandeep Chota, which opened to a tremendous response. His album claimed the number one album spot for Apple Music, All India, Indian Classical Charts for more than a month, and also made it to the final Grammy ballot round for the Best Global Music Album Award. He aims to bring Carnatic classical, an ancient Indian art form, to the modern audiences within India and globally, making it more approachable, familiar, and modern without compromising on the traditional aspects of the music. Listen in as Abhay shares his amazing journey as a musician, his days with his guru Vidwan Mandolin U. Srinivas, the making of his debut album, and his onward journey with music. Hi Abhay, such a pleasure and honor to have you on You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Hearing this story, thank you for agreeing to have this conversation, because just listening to the fact that music, the guitar, and you make such a beautiful combination itself made me intrigued to understand what little Abhay was to the Abhay that the world knows you today as.
Well, little Abhay was a very funny guy. I think that's, yeah, it's big Abhay is still as funny as little Abhay, but hopefully slightly wiser. But I think, I have very vivid memories as a child where, you know, listening to the kind of music that I grew up listening to. And I realize now when I reflect on it, that that's what shaped who I am today, or what I'm trying to be today, at least. And it's played such a large part. I have very clear memories of, you know, being a three-year-old. I think I was probably around 3 or 4, I think. And going to my uncle's house, my father took me there, and he had this huge speaker that he had built himself. I think it must have been at least 3 feet tall, 3.5 feet tall. And wow. I used to love to sit with my ear next to it for some reason. And I remember he had played some Mozart, some Beethoven on it. And I don't know why it should move 3-4 year old child, or how it ends up moving. But I guess that's the beauty of it, and it did, and I'd been hooked to it ever since. So in my childhood, at least, I was very sure that I was going to grow up into a Western classical pianist, and I also wanted to be a conductor, an orchestra conductor.
And who even introduced you to all these terms, that world of orchestra?
A lot of it was because I kept, when I used to go to my uncle's place, I used to keep listening to this music. And then around the age of maybe 8 or 9, I remember we used to live in Bombay back then. And for anyone who lives in Bombay, they'll know how beautiful an experience it was to go to Rhythm House. It was this huge music store. And everybody, you know, that was the mecca for all rhythm, music lovers. And everyone used to go there. And I went there first with my mom and dad, and I went crazy looking at all the music there. And I remember, and I still have that cassette, by the way. It was a Mozart violin concerto cassette that I bought. And I used to just sit and read all the, you know, the information in the leaflets that used to come. And that's how I started picking up what it might be, because there was a small description of the music itself. There was a description of the composer, the principal artist, the orchestra, the conductor. And that's how I started kind of, you know, gathering this information that, okay, this is how it works. I still had no idea of the gravitas of it or how beautiful that world actually was, but it was something that used to make me feel good. It was something that used to make me feel at home for some reason. I can't explain why, but it just is what it is. So that's how I started listening to music in the first place. And I started playing the keyboard and the tabla around the age of maybe around, I think I was 5 or 6 or something. And I got addicted to the feeling of playing an instrument, which I think is a feeling that I kind of carried forward into my later life as well, thankfully, because I love what I get to do today for a living. So yeah, in a nutshell, that's how I started off.
Okay, now the rest of the journey, we're cracking this nut, okay? That's what this conversation is going to be about, because, okay, so you were already introduced to music, you were playing a few instruments. And how did the journey progress? Was it somebody at home who introduced you, or was an instrumentalist? How did the journey into the world of music, especially the instruments, begin?
So when I was, the first instrument that I learned was the tabla. I used to go for a tabla class. As we all know, like in children are usually, you know, enrolled into some kind of a class. And for me, it happened to be tabla, because I used to always, my mom and dad say that I always used to keep, you know, beating my fingers all the time on some surface or the other. And it's a habit that I have to this day. Anyone who knows me closely know that my fingers never stand still. So I think they probably recognized that I had a liking for rhythm. I had a liking for some kind of beat or something like that. So they naturally thought that tabla would be something I'd enjoy. And I did. I really do enjoy tabla. And I learned that for a few years. And I think I was probably around the age of 6 or 7 when my father came home one day. I remember this very clearly. He came home with this longish package and very excitedly told me, look, I've got something that you're going to like. And he opened it, and there was a beautiful Yamaha synthesizer keyboard, and it blew my tiny little mind, because there were all these buttons on it and these, you know, these numbers that lit up and these keys, and it was something that I had never seen before, and it was fascinating for me. And he had told me that you can play this whenever you want, but as long as I'm there, like in my presence, I don't want you touching this in my absence. So as any obedient kid would do, I obviously started playing it in his absence more. So, and those, I remember those sessions when I used to just sit alone. Like whenever he'd go to work, I'd, you know, creep up and take that keyboard out of the cupboard and connect it and start tinkering around with it. And I started finding out that, okay, the right side note played with this note on the left side makes it sound happy. If I play this note, it makes it sound sad. If I play this note, makes it sound a little weird or whatever. So I started discovering these colors, which we today know as harmonies. And it fascinated me. It fascinated me that, you know, that music could be colored like this, that notes could be given a kind of emotion and they could make you feel a certain way. So after about a couple of years of doing this hidden keyboard lesson thing on my own, one day my dad caught me playing something on the keyboard that he came and he was like, where did you learn to play that? And I said, I had to confess that I've been, you know, chori chipe, I've been doing this little mischief behind his back. But he was so happy that he said, okay, you know what, just play it whenever you want to, because he was very happy that I was doing this. And that's where I kind of entered into the world of, apart from the tabla, the world of, you know, melody and harmony as such. And that was something that fascinated me even back then, that, you know, music was always something that kind of touched the deepest recesses of my brain. I always felt that somewhere deep inside. I couldn't explain why it was, but I always felt it. And yeah, that's how I started playing music as such, playing melody as such.
Okay. And after the tabla, the synthesizer, how did your journey continue? You continued with the synthesizer all through school and college?
Yeah. I mean, more or less, the keyboard was always there. And around the, when I was in the eighth grade or ninth grade, I
had. Until now, you didn't join synthesizer keyboard classes or anything?
No. Oh. I've never formally gone for keyboard classes. I've only learned tabla formally, and that was just for maybe a couple of years or so. And then much later, I got the blessed opportunity to learn Carnatic music under the late Vidwan Mandalin Srinivas. So I used to go to Chennai and I used to learn from him, but that was much later. But until then, it was all more of a self-taught kind of journey. So around the eighth or ninth grade, I had a best friend who got a secondhand guitar from somewhere. And I used to go and play cricket with him and tennis with him every evening. And I started noticing that I was very drawn to this instrument, which used to be lying in the corner. And it had one string missing, but I couldn't care less. I just wanted to just tinker with it and, you know, make some sound with it. It was incoherent, obviously, but I just loved how it sounded and how it felt on my fingers and how it felt overall. And then I started playing that, and that was the first time I actually ever touched a guitar properly. And then a couple of years later, a cousin of mine handed down his old guitar to me, which also had a string missing, by the way. I don't know what destiny I have with half-strung guitars, but there we go. My first guitar was a five-string guitar. It was supposed to have six, but it was five. Anyway, so, I learned on a five-string guitar, actually. I learned my basic chords and basic notes on a five-string guitar. And it was a journey which was very self-exploratory, and it was an interesting journey, because back then we didn't have YouTube or Google. I mean, we did, but it would take about maybe 3 to 4 hours to just connect to the internet, and then one picture of a guitar would take about five more hours on the dial-up connection. So obviously it was not a reliable form of learning, as an educational tool. So I used to, whatever little of harmony that I knew on the keyboards, I would kind of correlate it with the guitar and try to learn that chord. Like, okay, this is a C major, or this is a C minor, or what have you. So that's how I started playing the guitar in the first place. And then once that happened, there was no turning back. I mean, in my childhood, I was very sure that I was going to grow up into a classical pianist, but I never foresaw this in my school days that I'd end up being a Carnatic guitarist or whatever. Even the Carnatic guitar happened later, but yeah, when I first started playing the guitar, it was just Western guitar. And then I started learning a few more complex chords and started foraying into the rock and the jazz fusion kind of genres. That's how guitar happened. That's when I became a professional guitarist, if you can call it that. That was probably around the age of 19, 20 or so. I was fresh out of college.
Okay, one pause button here, okay, Abhay?
Yeah.
You never spoke about studies all through. I want to know what mold your parents were made of that they allowed you to explore the world of music. And what about studies all through school? Because by the time kids are in seventh, eighth, they're already aspiring doctors, engineers, or chartered accountants or lawyers. So everyone lets go of all these distractions, as they are called, to get into one of these streams to find a career. And here you are, free willing, moving into this or that and instruments and music. What about studies and school?
You know, I never even realized that I didn't mention studies till you brought it up. Because for me, I think, yeah, it's very interesting that you did. Because I think for me, I don't know what to call it, but I was always a rebel through school. Not that I ever had to rebel with my parents. My parents have always been very supportive of my decisions. But I think I kind of always rebelled against the templated way of life. I don't know if I'm making much sense, but even when I was in school, I never gave studies too much importance, not as much as my teachers would have me give it, much to their chagrin, of course.
But clearly the favorite student.
Surprisingly, but you know what? Surprisingly, my teachers have always been very nice to me, despite my negligence of my studies and all. So I've always been very grateful to them, because some study environments can get toxic. You hear of these things and it can have a negative effect later. But for me, I was very, very lucky in that sense. So I was always in my own world, even in school. Even when the classes were going on, I had my head in the clouds. This was a constant complaint that used to, if ever I had a complaint in school that reached my parents, it was this, that he's always dreaming. I never used to get up to mischief. I was never a destructive kid. I would never, put a cracker under the professor's seat, or I would never break the chalkboard, or I would never get into any kind of that mischief. I was just in my own world, in my own space. I was generally zoned out all the time. And I remember even in school, I always wanted to, I had very big ideas for some reason. I was never on the ground. My head was always up in space. Okay. And so I remember in school, I came up with this big plan that this must have been in sixth grade. I was 11 at that time. And I came up with this big plan that, I want to make an animation movie. And I came up with these storyboards. I wrote out a script, and I enlisted a bunch of my friends in the project. And we used to sit every Saturday and Sunday and draw out these little sceneries and plan out the scenes. And we had no idea how we were going to make it. There was a tiny detail we all missed out on, or where the money was going to come for all this. But we were school kids and we were innocent. And we were like, let's go ahead and make an animation movie. So we went ahead with that plan until one of the teachers found out that I was distracting everybody else with these grand ideas, and then a note was sent home. I pretty much followed that project all on my own because everyone else dropped out.
And didn't see the light of the day?
Unfortunately, it only got up to the scripting and storyboard stage, but it's there. I still have it at home. I mean it's in my parents' home in but I've still preserved all those books that I still there.
I'm sure you're going to revisit it sometime when you're ready. Now that you know who makes those movies.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I wouldn't mind.
No, because you know these kind of moments we never realize, but now when you look back and reflect, you realize the seeds of all that we turn out to be as we grow in the journey of life have been sown way back, way back. And here you are, a 19-year-old in college, learning on your own. And did you go to college?
I did go to college.
And became part of the college band as well?
Yeah, I did a few things in college. But even in college, I was pretty much always in my own world. I did join a few projects. I did a little bit of theater in college. Little bit of music as well. I used to play the tabla more back then. So funnily enough, some of the stage shows that we did in college, I was playing the tabla, not the guitar, which upon reflection now it's quite an amusing memory to think of. But it was a beautiful experience nonetheless, so I no regrets there. But even in college, I remember I studied in Ferguson College. I did my graduation there. I studied English literature, and but that's only officially. Most of the time I was never in the class.
But literature is a subject like that. It's all about...
I had the skill to turn 5 sentences into 15. So I guess I somehow managed to pass my courses.
Clearly you knew what are the 5 most important sentences.
Yeah,
And I think that's where music helps, focus. So here is somebody who is into melody, harmony, and percussion. And there is the guitar, but tabla is what you're bringing out more often in college. And where did you reconnect with the guitar and Carnatic music? How did the two come together and when did they actually join?
So in my college days, even though I was part of a band I was playing tabla with, my interest was always in guitar. It was something that once I started playing it in school at my friend's place, it was something that never let go of my psyche or whatever you call it. And so I had this 5-string guitar that my cousin very graciously handed down to me, and I still have it at home. And now it has six strings. So I used to carry that to college every day. And those who might be familiar with the campus of Ferguson College in Pune, they'll know that there's a hill at the back. It's called a tekdi. They call it a tekdi. And I used to go on top of the tekdi and sit every morning at 7 o'clock. And I mean, that's the time I had to show up to college. So I used to pretend to go to college, go up on top of the hill instead of going to my lectures, and sit and tinker with the guitar and try and find out more about this instrument and try and, you know, just brush up on my skills and practice. And I would do that till about 11:30 in the day. And then I would take, when it used to get, the sun used to beat down really hard. So I would take a book and I would go and sit in the library and read. Nothing of my studies, obviously, because why would I in college? So I would just take a book and I would just go and sit and read in the college library. I used to love doing that. And then when it was time to come back home, I would come back home and say, oh, okay, I've attended college. So that was how most of my college life went. But I think that education that I got up on the hill there really stood me in good stead later on in life, because that's when I started getting into it seriously. And I thought, okay, you know what, I want to make a career out of this. And I first started teaching. I remember, in fact, fresh out of college, I joined a company here in Bangalore. In fact, the first ever job I had was in Bangalore back then. This must have been 2005 or something. And I joined there, and I had a bunch of roles to play in that company. I used to teach now when I think back, I don't know how I did that, but it was something like coaching. It was motivational speaking. I don't know how I even got into it, how I was even enlisted to do something like that. But I remember doing that. I remember teaching kids spoken English and how to prepare for interviews and cursive writing. And in among all of this plethora of activities that I used to undertake at that company was also music teaching, where I used to teach the keyboard and the guitar.
Okay.
But I did that for about 2 months, and I realized that this was not meant for me. It was a beautiful initiative that the company was doing, but I always wanted to be on stage. I wanted to perform. I wanted to be a professional musician. So I remember one day I had a lunch break, and I took the lunch break, but I didn't have any lunch. This was in Bangalore, if you know, Jainagar fourth block.
Yeah, I do.
It, now it has a metro, but back then it was all just trees on top. It was a beautiful avenue. And I went and sat under a tree on a bench, and I just thought out things for about an hour or two. I didn't show up back at work, which is probably very unprofessional. But I remember making that decision that day that, you know what, I need to do this. There's no looking back. There's no two ways about it. Mm-hmm. Whatever happens, happens. So I went back to work, which is about half a kilometer from that spot. I walked into my boss's cabin and I told her, look, this is the thing, you know. I love what you guys do. I love how you've been with me. You all have been the best bosses, but this is not meant for me. And I need to kind of, you know, follow my own thing. Otherwise, I'm never going to be able to give 100%. And you wouldn't want an employee that cannot give 100% to what you're doing here. So my boss was very gracious enough to say, you know what, I understand where you're coming from. So let's part ways on a good note. And from the office, I went to a travel agent. I booked my ticket back to Pune, which was where I was based at the time. And the next night, I remember, I packed up everything and took the bus back home and went back to Pune and started doing music. That's where my journey began, basically,
okay,
as a professional.
Okay. And when you went back with that decision very clear,
yeah,
you picked up what first, which of them? Because you had the keyboard, you had the tabla, you had the guitar, and you had everything, melody, harmony, all, and the strings up there in your head. So what did you put together and how did the journey begin?
So when I first went back, I joined a couple of local bands. I even put together a band with a couple of close friends, and then we started doing these small concerts around Pune. Back then I used to do, like I said, rock and pop, all of that. So I even used to sing back then. Mm-hmm. How people tolerated my singing, I still don't know, but I somehow seem to have escaped that. I somehow seem to have escaped, you know, eggshells and toilet seats and bottles being thrown at me. I stand here with no injuries, head injuries to show for it.
Maybe they're all healed.
Yeah, maybe it's part of an evening I don't remember. So anyway, so I started doing that, and then I was doing that for about, I think almost 2 to 3 years I did that. But at the same time, I was getting very interested in jazz fusion. I remember I was listening a lot to this band called the Mahavishnu Orchestra, which people who listen to jazz are very familiar with. And I was very heavily influenced by John McLaughlin's guitar playing style. Mm-hmm. Incidentally, as it happens, the first sound of the guitar that I had heard in life was John McLaughlin's guitar, from a 1987 album called Making Music by John McLaughlin and Ustad Zakir Hussain Saab. So that was a cassette that my dad used to play for me when I was just about 2 or 3. And I remember I used to throw tantrums at home where I would refuse to go to my pre-KG, or what do you call it, Montessori?
Yeah.
I would refuse to go to my whatever it was, preschool, every day, unless that tape was played in full. So that was the kind of kid I was. Probably a pain, but yeah. So coming back to the, this was probably around 2007 or so, and I realized I wanted to kind of branch out from rock into going into jazz and jazz fusion. And I was sitting and kind of trying to educate myself with all of that. And I was also listening to Carnatic music a lot, because Carnatic music, I'd grown up with it. And then I'd kind of lost connection with it for a long time, because I used to listen to only Western classical, and then started listening to jazz and all of that. So Carnatic kind of took a break in my life, which is quite surprising if I think about it now. But after that, I remember I started listening a lot again to my guru's albums, Yu Srinivasji's albums. And there's this one night in Pune, I remember it was a cold December night, and I had a habit of sitting late at night and practicing. So I used to generally start around 10:30, 11 at night and go into the wee hours of the morning practicing. And I was listening to something that Yu Srinivasji had played, and I was thinking, why can't this be done on a guitar? I mean, why can't this be done on a standard guitar? There were people who were playing Carnatic guitar already. There was someone in the 70s and 80s called Sukumar Prasad who started off Carnatic guitar, and he was a magnificent player. And there are very few recordings of him available today, but and we don't know where he is today, unfortunately. But all we have are those beautiful recordings of his. And then there's already Prasanna playing the Carnatic guitar. But I wanted to kind of bring the expression that Yu Srinivasji brought on the mandolin onto the guitar, on a standard guitar. So I remember trying to tinker around with the raga Hamsadhvani, which till date is one of my favorite ragas among many. And it was quite a life-changing moment, even though probably what I was playing was sounding like rubbish back then. And but for me, I didn't care. I mean, it was so much fun to try and do something like that, that I knew that night that, you know what, I need to switch everything over to this. Everything in my life up until this moment had led to this, you know. And that night, I just left everything else. I remember calling up some of my, I started playing a little more with that. And I remember calling, having a talk with my friends and telling them, you know what, this is the direction I want to take my playing in. I don't know where it's going to go, but let me see, because this is where I feel, I don't know if the right word is calling or something like that, but that's what I felt back then. As I was doing all these experiments at home and I was kind of self-training myself. And the same year, Yu Srinivasji happened to have a concert in Pune. And one of my friends, who's a tabla player, he just told me very enthusiastically, hey, you should go and meet him. You know, you've been doing all this at home. Why don't you go and meet him? I said, hey, you mad or what? How can I go and speak to such a legend? You know, it's crazy. I don't even think he'll speak to me. But somehow he pushed me, and I'm so glad he did, because then I went into the green room and I had a chat with who by then had become a great, great personal hero. And it was such a beautiful conversation, because he was so humble, he was so sweet, and he was so open, you know, to talk to. It was a very humbling experience for me personally. And I just asked him on a whim, you know, I've been doing all of this. Do you see a chance of me being able to learn from a person like you and take this forward? And he immediately accepted me as a student. And I think that was the day my whole life changed.
Oh, okay. But what gave you the courage to ask him that, Abhay? Were you ready for a no?
I wasn't ready for a yes. I can tell you that. I wasn't ready for a no. I wasn't ready for a yes. I had no idea, actually. It was, call it an absolutely stupid impulse or whim. I don't know. I just in my head, I just went, you know, let's see what happens if you fly too close to the sun. Let's see where it goes. And I just asked him on a whim, will you teach me? Because I want to be able to do this properly. I don't want to do this, you know, half-baked. I don't want to be known as a half-baked artist. So he very graciously accepted me as a student. And we scheduled a class in Chennai at his residence about 2-3 weeks from there. And then I came to Chennai and I stayed there for a few days. I started my training under him. And I used to go to Chennai often. I mean, not every month, because his schedules and my schedules have had to match that. It was a little difficult. But we used to be in touch on the phone also. And once in 2-3 months, I'd go to Chennai, stay there for a few days and learn from him and come back. And I did this up until the time that he passed away, unfortunately, at a very young age. Yeah. Just 45 when he passed away, which is far too young. But this was in 2014, I remember, September 2014. So up until then, I learned from him.
And it was after a long time that you were getting into the Guru Shishya Parampara, if we can call that, and taking lessons from a guru. So legend apart, the relationship between a guru and a student is very, very different. So one is the pinch me moment of, is this true? But what are some of the things that you very subconsciously picked up and now on recollection know that it's because of your guru?
I think one of the greatest things that he taught me was how to learn music. That was something that I can never thank him enough for. That was one thing.
Which is? How do you learn?
How to learn music, as in he taught me how to listen. He taught me how to listen well. Mm. And he taught me what to listen for. So that when you're, you know, because the education never stops.
True.
Now it's been 8 years since he passed away, but I feel like he's still teaching me. Mm. I'm still listening to his recordings and I still feel like the lessons are continuing, and I still pick up things that I know that I didn't know before this. So it's a very tangible process. It's a very measurable process of education, which is still happening. So I can never thank him for that. And I think one of the things that I that I'm happy about picking up from him was he had a particular aesthetic that he would go for, a gentleness and a soul that he would bring to the music. And that was what appealed to me the most. It was not about the technique. It was not about the speed. It was not about the mathematical, gymnastics that used to happen. All of that, as fascinating as all of that is, it was the soul that he brought to the music. It was the expression that he brought forth is what I wanted to be able to try and replicate in my music, in my own way, not trying to copy him, but in my own way to bring that approach. And that's what I've been trying to do. And I think if I've picked up anything at all in that vein, it would be all because of him.
So is there, Abhay, before you, Srinivas, came into your life and a huge shift in the Abhay, the musician, post mandolin, you, Srinivas's influences directly on you?
Absolutely, absolutely. There's absolutely no doubt that my life can be divided into the pre and the post mandolin Srinivas, is, you know, and his influence. And I've seen that difference mentally as well as physically. Mm-hmm. What difference it's made to the way I, even to the way I touch the instrument, even to the way I place my fingers on it. It's made a sea change of a difference. So yeah, I think, yeah, the answer to that question would be yes, massively.
Okay. And You wanted to play Carnatic on the guitar. So how much did that influence the way you carried on post 2014 to the fusion artist you are today?
Well, I've always identified as a Carnatic guitarist ever since I started learning from him. This is in the late 2000s. And even after he passed away, I've not seen myself as anything other than, primarily other than a Carnatic guitarist. Of course, I've forayed into a lot of other things since, but the identity of me as a Carnatic guitarist remains very, very strongly with me.
And that foray into that space was something which seemed like a calling. Was it an interest, or was it what Abhay and the guitar were meant to do together?
I don't know what to call it, because I don't know whether to call it fate, destiny, or calling, or you know, whatever you term it. For me, it's a simple thing of fascination. I was like, when Carnatic happened to me, I was like a kid in a toy store. You know, I was a naive kid, and naive I use in the sense of innocence, yeah. Not in the derogatory sense. But I was like this naive kid in a toy store, you know, and everything was fascinating me. Every little corner, if there was something to look at and something to explore everywhere. And that's what Carnatic music did to me, because it's so vast, it's so beautiful, and it's got so many alleyways that you can, you know, turn your mind into that. I mean, even to this day, and anyone who's a practitioner of Carnatic music, or for that matter, even Hindustani classical or Western classical, whatever, jazz or music, is that kind of a thing. So Carnatic happened to do it for me. It was just about the fascination of the expression, the repertoire, the raga system, the tala system of Carnatic. It just captured my fancy, and it's not let go since.
And prior to this, you were somebody who was deeply into jazz. So this phase was completely into Carnatic. And where did the two meet? Did they meet to make you who you are today and what you're playing today?
Quite a lot of it, because I still listen to a lot of jazz. I still listen to a lot of Western classical and Carnatic classical. So there's no day that goes by when I'm not in touch with any of these three. It's such a large part of my life that it feels very weird to, you know, have a day where I'm not listening to either Western or jazz or Carnatic classical or something. And I think for me, what has happened is all of these three have somewhere come and joined up into what has now become my expression, or at least it's what I'm trying to discover as I go along. The beauty and the the sad thing about being an artist is you never finish exploring and discovering. So it's always a journey, you know, it's always ongoing. So I'm still trying to find that. And I think I'll still always be trying to find that. But as of now, that's where I am. I mean, I had the good fortune of releasing a solo album last year in June. And it was co-produced with Sandeep Chowta, and released on his label Namma Music. And I mean, that's another beautiful chapter that I was very blessed with, but we'll get into that. Mm-hmm. So in that album, I see influences of my whole musical journey as such. If I listen to that album now, I sit back and I realize that there are places where you can see snippets of my rock journey, my rock days, my pop days. There are snippets of my classical days. There are snippets of my jazz days. So all of that has kind of culminated into this one form of expression. So I never wanted to kind of make an album that had one singular label or one singular texture to it. It was just a story that I wanted to tell. And if it was leading me into this particular alley, I would go into that alley, explore it, come out. It was like that. It was just a journey where I didn't have a particular destination. I just wanted to go where my mind would take me. And that's, I think, what my first album is all about. I'm now in the process of a second one, but that's going to be very different from the first.
Yeah. And the first is really special all the time. And
always.
If it is this journey that we are talking, that you're going to, that you have expressed through music, I'm sure it must be a very beautiful listen to album as well. And
I'd love your opinion on it.
Oh, definitely. I will listen to it. I will listen to it because, you know, the beauty of music is music crosses all borders, languages. It's all about blending somewhere in space. And the space could be your head, it could be your heart, it could be just anywhere, the universe itself.
Yeah.
So when it comes to you, Abhay, post-2014, when you knew now that you're going to get on a journey without your guru and without Mandolin Srinivas, you have to pursue the journey. Sometimes, like they say, when you're ready, the teacher appears. And when you're really ready, the teacher disappears. So maybe that was the time you're teacher told you that you're really ready to face the world. And what happened then with your career as well? And how did it move further? And you knew somewhere that you're creating maybe a road not taken, or you're moving on a path that's going to be completely a Abhay's journey.
I think, so to answer this, I would have to go back to the around the time when he passed away, and it had come as a shock to the entire music fraternity, and myself included. I mean, I remember getting a call from Chari Bhai, Ravi Chari, the sitarist, around 9 in the morning, saying that this has happened, you know, and I was beyond broken at that time. But I remember the whole day, I couldn't stop playing for some reason. I couldn't stop playing the guitar. I just kept on playing. And it was emotional, but I kept on playing. And I realized this is something now that I would have to do on my own. And that was a scary thought. It still is scary, but I think I've made my peace with it. I've kind of come to terms with that loss. But I do miss him a lot. But it's something that's part of life. I mean, there are chapters. Every life is all about chapters. And I think it was just that chapter. It was a blessed chapter, and then it came to an end, and then I had to kind of forge my own pathway. So it was at that time that I started kind of finding my own expression with what I wanted to do, what I wanted to say with the guitar, how I wanted to say it, what kind of areas I wanted to go into improvisationally and expressionally, or, you know, that's where I started finding myself, because before that I'd kind of outsourced all of that to my guru. You know, like, you tell me what I'm supposed to play, you tell me how this is supposed to go. And now I was like, you know, up the creek without a paddle. So I had to learn how to swim for myself. And I think that also taught me quite a lot in terms of musically where I could go with this, what I wanted to say. And most importantly, it also taught me what I didn't want to say. I think I cannot exclude that from the journey, about being very clear about what I don't want to do. You know, a lot of times we know what we want to do, but I'm very clear about what I don't want to do in my journey. So I think that helped a lot to go forward and to go wherever it's taken me today. I mean, the thing is, in our musical journey, or any journey of life, we never know sometimes, you know, when things come up, we may not be ready for it, but things just come up and we just take them up. So even this whole, whatever I'm doing now with my career, that I'm composing for movies and background scores and all of that, that part of me has, it just kind of landed in my lap, along with how Carnatic music kind of landed in my lap one cold wintry night. It just happened, you know, it just happened. So everything in my life has been like that. Something just happens, and then I'm like, oh, okay, you know what, this is interesting. Let's delve a little deeper into this and see where it takes me. So.
Awesome. You are like in a solid reflection mode, and this is where the whole world was pushed into during the pandemic. All of us went into our reflective spaces wherein, and we suddenly realized the pause was in our own hands. We just had to get off the treadmill, switch off the treadmill and sit down. And many of us took a lot of lessons. Well, the perils of forgetting them also coming along. But what have your reflections of the from the pandemic been about? Yeah.
The first thing that my mind is, this pandemic, I mean, this is the first pandemic that I've ever been in, and hopefully the last. But the pandemic completely changed the direction of my life for the better, in a way. I mean, with all due respect to all the damage that it's caused to people. But in my own personal journey, at a time when I felt, oh, this is going to cause a lot of personal damage to my career, because up until then, it was all about just concerts and touring and, you know, recording sessions, all of that. But you won't believe, I didn't even have my own recording setup back then, before the pandemic. And the pandemic forced me into that situation where I had to sit down and think, oh, you know what, this is not working out. So I have to, you know, keep, one thing is I have to keep the kitchen fire burning. Yeah. I have to see where I can go with this now, because it's not in my hands where the world is going, but what is in my hands is what I do about it. And I started learning production and all of that. I got myself a studio set up at home and I started learning production and all of that. And then that was when everything changed for me, because I started looking at music in a very different way, because now I had the tools where I could make my own music. Because up until then, it was all about, you know, answering a phone call, taking down a date, going there, doing a show, coming back home with a paycheck. That was it. That was my career up until the pandemic. And the pandemic changed all that, because everything came to a sudden standstill. You know, for months together, we were just sitting at home with nothing. And so that freedom that I got with this new direction that I took was very, it was very enriching, because I got to learn so much about the business of music, about the way it works, about the nuances of so many other things other than my own little tiny tunnel vision of concerts that I used to do back then. And I felt that, you know, it started broadening my horizons, it started broadening my creativity, and I started looking at music in a very different way. So it changed me internally quite a lot, for the better. I feel, at least for the better. And that's when the whole album thing happened, because it was around late 2020 and early 2021 that the whole album started happening.
And so from that album, now we are having the second one in the offing, so coming out maybe.
Yeah.
And this is also the time when there are many things that you shared about how life threw things at you, and you were not sure whether you were ready. But there's a belief I carry very close to my heart that when an opportunity comes to you, it comes to you because you're ready, even if you know about it. I think life definitely has your back. And so trusting life and just jumping into life's lap is the easiest thing to do. And it's very clear in your case that that's what you did, complete surrender to life itself. You know, would you agree here about what I said? Because that's exactly how I see your journey also in all that you've shared so far.
No, I completely agree, because that's exactly how my life has gone up until this point. So I have always considered myself very lucky in that sense, because things have just happened at, I don't know whether to call it the right time or whatever, but things have just happened, you know. So I've kind of always tried to go with the flow, because trying to swim against it is, it's, you know, it's not constructive and it leads nowhere.
Yeah.
But I've kind of always gone with the flow. So I remember it was the December of 2020. I'd come to Bangalore when things had just opened up a little bit. So I'd come to Bangalore on a visit. I'd still not moved to Bangalore. I moved to Bangalore just early March this year. but otherwise I was based in Bombay at the time. And I came to Bangalore and I met up with another one of my childhood heroes, who was Sandeep Chowta. So I was always listening to his music, his background scores for movies and all of that since my childhood, since my school days. And then I got the opportunity around May of 2020, when the pandemic had just, you know, started, to do a recording for him remotely for his album Yeto Veli Diaries. And that was the first thing that I'd done with him. And then subsequently, we were in touch and we had been fans of each other, me more than him. He's like a big brother to me now. I call him Annagalu. So December, I met him for the first time. I had come to Bangalore and I went to his place. We were just listening to music till late night, almost 2-3 in the morning. And he told me around 3 in the morning, I remember him telling me, listen, I want you to do a solo album and I'll produce it with you, but I wanted to do it. And obviously my head blew apart. I mean, this is Sandeep Chowta. He's telling me that he wants to do an album with me, a solo album. And I didn't know how to react, but I just said yes. I had no idea what I was going to do. I just said yes. And then that album finally released last year in June, June 21, it released. And that album led me to other things in my life, which, like you said, it just kind of, you know, life happens to you and you just go with it. Apart from all the other music that I mentioned that I used to listen to in my life, there was one other interest, one other genre of music that I always had an interest in, which was background scores. I had a huge interest in film music scores for some reason. And by that, I don't mean like the songs of a movie. I meant the background scores of the movie. So I had the scores of movies like Jurassic Park, scores of movies like obscure movies, you know, like scores that you would never hear normally, like movies like Toy Story and all. You would never have these cassettes, but I grew up with these cassettes at home. That was something that I'd always had an interest in. I never went in that direction. I don't know why I didn't go in that direction, but I, even to this day, I still kept listening to background scores. And then last year, I remember clearly, it was my birthday and we were traveling to Bangalore on a leisurely trip, my wife and I. As soon as I reached Bangalore, I got a call from this guy who was making a short film. And he said that they'd heard my album and they were very interested in working with me. Now, this is also another very interesting story, because there's a dancer, Bharatanatyam dancer called Savita Shastri, who's an absolute legend in her field. And my wife and I had been followers of her for several years. And we were like, this is just sublime work. And we were such fans of her. And I got a call from the production company that, you know, makes these movies for Savita Shastri. And it was her husband who gave me a call saying, I write and direct these movies. And we checked out some of your work and we'd be interested in working with you. Would you be interested in doing a background score for this movie that we are just doing? And I stared blankly at the wall for a long time because I didn't know how to reply to this, because first of all, I had never even done a background score in my life. So I didn't know where to start. But for some weird reason, call it the stupid impulse rising again, I just said, okay, I'm up for it. Let's do this. And then I remember I hadn't even carried a keyboard or anything to record on. So I ordered a keyboard on Amazon, a tiny little keyboard. And it came to my aunt's place, and we were supposed to stay for 3 days. We ended up staying for 3 weeks. I did the score in 3 weeks, and then I went back to Bombay. And as it turned out, that movie won an award for the best background score in the Delhi International Film Festival.
Wow! Congratulations.
It was such a shock, because I mean, like, yeah. I was just left the entire while. I'm just staring blankly at the wall going, what is happening? How do you describe
it? Sarah, Sarah, my friend.
whatever will be, I guess. So, yeah, it's Murphy's Law. Yeah, and so there my journey started. And then subsequently, I've gone on to make 4 other background scores with them. And now I'm in the process of scoring two web series and another movie. And so that's what I'm currently doing. So apart from my Carnatic guitar concerts, I also do background scores for movies. And so something that I'd grown up with, background score is something that I'm getting to do now, and I could not consider myself more fortunate. It's a very enjoyable thing, and it's making me explore a part of me that I really was not aware it existed. And that's the beauty of life. And that's why it's a nice segue into what you were saying, that you just kind of go with the flow. You know, you don't stop life. As life happens, you go with the flow. And that's one of the things, I think, the greatest things that I've learned in life.
And correctly the point, when you can leave us with three life lessons, now that you know your life's favorite child as well, three lessons that life has taught you, which you'd like to leave us with.
Lesson number one is this, just, you know, go with the flow always. Don't resist life where you have a good feeling about it. Just go with it. Even if you don't know anything about it, you can always learn on the way, which is what happened with the bag. And even to this day now, it's been more than a year now since I've been doing that. And I'm still learning something on a daily basis. And that's life lesson number two, which I feel is something that I try to remember on a daily basis, is to always be like a kid on the first day of school in life. Even up until the day you die, it serves you well to kind of be like a kid on the first day of school, because you're always wanting to learn something new about everything that is around you. We don't know where life goes. We don't know how long life is. We don't know where we are going to be after this, or if there is anything after this. But what I do have now, I know. So why not make the most of it and learn as much as I can about as many things that are there out there? I get genuine, the term nowadays is FOMO, FOMO, fear of missing out. So I get genuine FOMO so many times in the day that, you know, I'm never going to be able to learn everything that I want to be able to learn in this life. But I try to learn as much as possible. So that's life lesson number two, I feel. And life lesson number three is, I mean, on a personal level, it's always been chasing truth, beauty, and aesthetics. Always try to chase the truth, always trying to find out everything that's there around you in as true a sense as possible. Try to find the beauty in everything. Try to make something beautiful, whether it's, even if it's, you know, making a simple dish of food, or whether it's making a grand piece of music, try to make it as beautiful as possible. And as aesthetic as possible, as nuanced as possible, so that, you know, it can please you intellectually, emotionally, it can please you mentally, and it can, hopefully, if it can have the same effect on someone else, then that's the cherry on the cake. That's where I am at this moment in life. I don't know where I'm going to go, but this is where I am.
Humble, authentic, and philosophical. A beautiful blend for a musician. Abhay Nayampally, thank you so much for sharing this amazing journey of yours. And I really feel honored that you agreed to be on You and I with Rashmi Shetty. It's
thank you so much.
Beautiful journey.
It was a beautiful conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, and all the very best.
Thank you.
With that, we come to the end of this weekly quest of You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Do let us know if you know people who make the world beautiful. Write in to rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. That is rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. Come, let's explore this amazing world together, both you and I.